you need to refer, if you're staring at the agenda for the, at the, on the webpage for the meeting, which says at the top UOM Ontology Standard Workshop 2009-10-30. If you scroll down, you'll see the agenda, and there's a section that says consensus on scope, 10-15 scope issues. And actually, we're on time. Well, maybe 10 minutes. Change the time. Okay. And it says Ed Barkmeyer will speak from NIST. U.S. National Institute for Standards and Technology will be speaking, and there's a link next to it called Slides, and these are the slides that he will be speaking from.
Ed.
The purpose of this bit of the activity, which we expect to go for a while, is to get agreement on what the scope of the standard is going to be. There have been probably 2 months worth of email discussions on and off about different scope issues, and I think I've captured all of the ones that are major ones. So that's what this is really about. I'm not going to be doing much speaking. I'm hoping that most of you will do the speaking. All I'm going to do is raise the issues. And I should say, by the way, that the logo up in the corner, we owe, I believe, to Peter Yim and Joel Bender. Is that right?
Yeah, this is Joel. And sorry about having a non-transparent background so that it looks like a white block.
Joel Bender, hello.
Oh, yes, up in the upper left-hand corner. Yeah, it shows online, PDF viewer. PowerPoint viewer, I guess. Yeah.
No, it just needs to have a transparent background so it doesn't look like it's just a big block. That's all. It's a graphic artist kind of, you know, that's a, never mind.
Like one of the stamps I saw.
Yeah, thank you for the acknowledgement anyway.
If you go to slide two, slide two is just a summary, a quick summary of the domains of issues to some extent. And so I'm just, so this is kind of the outline of things to come, and we'll just move on immediately to slide three, which is the first one. The first issue, which is actually came from Mr. Chavez and some others, is the question of whether you need a model of quantity to deal to create an ontology for units of measure at all. UCUM has no model of quantity. UCUM has a notion of units and the concept of dimension, and it works with those. So the first question, I guess, is, I would have said NIST strongly believes that we need a model of quantity, an ontology, a basic ontology for quantity, a la the VIM, in order to discuss units, because, in our view, a unit of measure is by its nature, a kind of quantity of some kind of quantity, and you need to know what kind of quantity there are in order to understand them. We also believe strongly in the idea of systems of units being dependent on systems of quantity. So, having said that, that's simply representing the official opinion of the NIST organization. It doesn't mean anything with respect to this body, obviously, and that's the question. So the first question is, do we need the measure? I mean, I don't know whether the consensus is that we do and we have a few stalwarts who believe that they don't need it, or the consensus is that it's still an open issue. Does anybody actually have an opinion besides NIST?
Well, what it's worth, I have an opinion and agree with yours, but we definitely do need this.
It's not hard to do.
This is Frank Olson. I also agree that we need quantities.
Let's start the other way. Is there anybody who disagrees who happens to be attending on this one? I know that Gunther isn't here. It's too bad because this was one of the issues that he raised, and there are some others who believed, I think, as he does. I saw the email. I don't think any of them is represented.
This is Nicholas Roquette.
Nicholas.
About the scope, I think that it's, well, obviously, units only, I don't think it is going to be good enough. Quantities and units is certainly the minimum, like, for example, the QDB model that was developed in SysML with Hans Peter and De Koenig and Roger Burkhardt. But that even is not quite enough because in practice some people, for example, use concepts like coordinate systems, reference frames, gravitate around quantities and units, and at this time it's not entirely clear. Even if you read the fine print of the International Vocabulary of Metrology, on which the QDV model is based, how to use the concepts of metrology to actually talk about what some folks in common sense call, for example, say, a coordinate system. So, and what is not clear to me is whether this would fall into the scope of this work or not.
I want to make clear, Nicola, that we will, that is an issue that's coming on the list a bit later, which is that there's two versions of that, and I think that's an important issue. That's not nearly so well, so generally accepted as to whether, where we go in that thing. What, at this point, I was trying to get these things. The first question is, you do agree, though, that we need to have a background model of quantity in order to understand units of measure. That's specifically. Is that right?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. So then in that case, I'm going to go on to the next issue.
Hey, can I just, Howard Mason, just one clarification. So by the model of quantity, you're talking about setting up the both mass, length, and the dimensionality of those against which you then develop units of measure.
Right.
Okay, that's fine. Just for the non-deep measure ontologists that might be on the call.
Yeah. Actually, I suppose what I should have done was to pull up David's diagram. The Vim talks about quantities and quantity kinds and so on as a foundation for discussing measurement. And obviously, the question that Nicola just raised is whether how much we're going to do that is measurement as distinct from what we're going to do about units and quantities. And I want to separate the first issue is we believe that you can't understand units if you don't really understand quantity. I don't understand quantity. And by quantities, I mean the basic ideas are the ones that are in David's diagram, which is on whichever one of the web pages, which is the idea of quantities and quantity kinds and quantity values. And we get into this issue of quantity magnitudes, and I'm going to come to that one. One of the questions that is, and to simplify the matter, there are most the SI units are about scalar quantities. There is the whole issue of general concept quantity includes things like vector quantities. Is it appropriate for us to restrict the scope of the ontology to scalar quantity, because units appear to be about scalar quantities is what the whole point was. So the question is it appropriate to restrict the scope of the ontology to scalar quantities as opposed to allowing and conceivably having to deal with the issues of vector quantities?
I think we may be forced to deal with some vector quantities if for no other reason than to differentiate between work and torque, because work is essentially a dot product of force and distance, and torque is the cross product. And in scalar terms, they have the same underlying dimensionality, but they're obviously not the same kind of thing. And I don't know how you can differentiate with the two of them unless you actually confront the vector nature of these kinds of measurements.
Yeah. This is Hans Peter Kuhn. We've developed a model which does both and order tensor quantities, which is a generalization of vectors and matrices. And I think it will be needed in the end, but as a first version of this ontology, I think we can restrict ourselves to scalars and then extend the model for higher dimensionality sensors for later on.
If I could just make a general methodological point, I think we have to distinguish between the ontology kind of admitting the existence of things, in this case, say, higher dimensional units, quantities, sorry, on the one hand, and it being a definitive description of them or defining them on the other or analyzing them. I think what we should do at this stage is say, you know, should we build a model which refuses to even acknowledge the existence of these things and I think that should be no. We don't have to go to the other extreme of taking on the task of formalizing them. We can create a higher level categorization which has, as it were, a slot for them and names it, sketches what is intended to be in them in natural language, and then does no more. And that, I think, would be of value if we could organize that.
I would tend to agree with you, Ms. Nicholas. I would tend to agree with you if we could find a way to make the distinction between, for example, like what you mentioned about work and talk, which is the topic that actually came up in our discussions on 3DD with Hans Peter Koenig and some experts here at JPL, like Robert Rasmussen, and where indeed it's actually a non-trivial matter to actually extend even the QEDV to make the difference that you mentioned well-founded. On the other hand, I can also recognize that if somebody said, I just want to make sure that we know that those two things are not the same, but we don't know yet perhaps how to define them precisely, then I would like at least to make sure that for those that we know how to define, we could make it clear that we have a way to do this with whatever version of the ontology we have at a given time. And for those that we don't know how to define, that someone is not going to, in the end, make the mistake of just because it is in the ontology, therefore it is defined. And making that kind of meta distinction there of the scope of what the ontology allows us to define is, I think, is important, is basically what we're kind of talking about here.
Okay, Peter had his hands up physically.
No, actually, I was trying to alert you that Hans Peter had his hand up.
Right, thank you. In the interest of progressing this, I think what I'm hearing is crowding it. We certainly need to cover scalars. We need to be able to extend to vectors, matrices, and possibly tensors. So if we do start on a scalar basis, then we shouldn't do anything that precludes that extension. Okay.
Hey. Everybody agree with that one? I think that's pretty clear. Yeah, I agree with Nicholas' point. I think that the problem that he just described was what I understood Pat to suggest is that we effectively introduce what now would be a primitive type for vector quantity or whatever it is, say that it's not the same as a scalar quantity, and then ignore it from there on. Nicholas is saying is that ideally if you introduce it, you want to define it, and that's when the problem starts.
And you want to make sure that even if you had a primitive thing that said, you know, these are point ideas that we haven't defined yet, how do you really know for sure that they're disjoint from those that we can define?
Because we say so.
Okay, but you know, some folks, like maybe Frank, know how to differentiate between work and torque, or like Rasmussen, between, you know, tensors and torsors, but I have to admit that those distinctions, I've kind of forgotten how to really recognize them, and off the cuff, I wouldn't want to be in a position where I would be basically snowed into believing an ontology when in fact it's bogus. But I don't agree that maybe it's something that we should perhaps revisit later on into the presentation to see if there's something that comes up that allows us to capture that kind of distinction between the scope of what we know how to define with an ontology versus what we don't know how to define, and at least provide some means for reasoning engines to somehow give us some sense whether we're abusing the scope of an ontology.
If I could just make a general point again, I think we really should be careful about saying that ontologists define things. Most ontologies don't go into enough detail to be described as, in any real sense, as defining anything. They really are just descriptive frameworks that you can categorize things within. Now one can argue about, you know, their adequacy and completeness and strength and so forth, but we shouldn't think of them as if you have a category that we're obliged to specify in enough detail that we've given a definition, because we will never end if we adopt that methodology. Sorry, I came to speak. That was cut in.
Okay, I understand the then how would you suggest we make it somewhat practical for someone to say, look, I don't even actually know what, I know that I need some kind of quantities, but I don't even know yet whether they're definable or not within this particular ontology. But at this point in time, I really want to capture my particular problem and then worry about defining the quantities later. That may be one approach, right? If someone is much more rigorous, another approach may be, okay, let's first define the quantity really precisely, and then let's use them to characterize the problem. Either one approach, in a sense, is perhaps legitimate. What is not entirely clear to me is how could we organize the ontology such that at a given point in time, we could more or less have a reasonable confidence whether someone is simply nominally describing things but not defining them, or whether someone has actually taken a shot at defining the things that are described and used in some context.
Nicola, if I can interrupt, we're now on to the issue of how rather than what. My real concern with this part of the meeting, at least, is, I think that your concern is valid, and we may want to make that an issue of a different category, but it's not a scope issue. It's how we're going to do what we're doing when we finally get around to trying to do it. And I think that we need to discuss exactly that kind of thing when we talk about how we're actually, what we're actually going to standardize and how, what we're going to do and what kind of excuses we're going to make for what we don't do. But at this point, I would like, this part I thought was really about what the scope of the ontology was. What is it that we want to ensure that we have covered, and what is it we're not going to have covered? And my understanding is that the agreement here is that we obviously need to be able to deal with scalar quantities, and we may need to be able to talk about vector quantities to some extent. We just don't know how much. Is that fair?
To the extent that the vectors, matrices, tensors, and beta suggested, more than one dimension, put it that way. And I think the issue that Nicola's talking about is the rigor we would do with the extension. Let's parking lot that one, because I think it's a problem for even extension and scalar.
I think that's an important issue, which is to say, it's something we're going to have to deal with. That's what I said. I just don't want to deal with it now. Next one. The one that's next on this list is a consequence of the VIN. VIN, after all, is about measurement.
Are you still on three?
I'm sorry, yes, I'm still on. I'm on the third bullet on three. The VIN is about measurement. As a consequence, it begins with the observation that the only quantities you ever actually see are instances that are physical. You can only measure the concentration of a given solution. You can only measure the mass of a given object. You can only measure the length of a given object. And this is an ocean-particular quantity. That is, and we got a discussion about philosophical tropes and all of that sort of stuff. But the bottom line here is that there is this notion that the VIM concept quantity, the first definition of quantity in the VIM, is this idea of particular quantity, that it means a property of a physical object that can be measured. And the property of a specific physical object. The idea, if you adopt that view ontologically, for example, as Pat Hayes pointed out in some email, is that if I have two sticks, which appear to be both exactly 30 centimeters long, they are two different quantities. Because you say that the quantity is the property of a given physical object, and then the length of one stick and the length of the other are different quantities. because they're not the length of the same stick, which is the problem. So that's the particular quantity notion, and it has an important ontological commitment in it. The other right is abstract quantity, or what David has wanted for a while, I think, maybe will do, I don't know, called quantity magnitude, is this idea of the abstraction, which is the thing that we think of as having a name, like 30 centimeters. It's the amount of length in a stick as distinct from the length of a given stick.
Okay, so
the amount of length, right, if you like, is the same between those two. And in that case, if you're measuring the amount of length, you can talk about them being equal. And this is an important distinction. And the question is, first of all, obviously we have to have the sufficient amount of length because that's the thing that we're going to do with the units. But the real question is, do we need the idea of particular quantity at all? It's a measurement notion. It's not so clearly a quantity notion. And that was that's one of the issues. Do we need to deal with the idea of particular quantity? It may be another one of those things which we can mention, note what it means, and stop. Okay. But if we go to measurement, then that becomes a critical concept, which is one of the things. So I don't. The question is, do we need to include the particular quantity notion? And if so, what do we need to do with it? Maybe that's going to come with measurement. We can come back to that. Does everybody understand what that issue was? Because that much of the email was trying to puzzle out what people whose notion of quantity was. Yeah, you know, things like 30 centimeters. Okay. And the Vim notion of quantity is that it is the length of a given stick.
Provide, I don't know that I'm being naive here, but I would have thought the quantity we're looking at is length, against which we assign units of measure. When we relate it to individual items, then that becomes much more of a product modeling instantiation activity. So if we're trying to record the facts about quantities and units of measure, then I would. My immediate reaction is that we don't need particular quantity.
I agree fully. I mean, you can think of an abstract quantity of 1 meter, or let's say 1 inch, and or represented by 25.4 meter, which exists upon its own, and then you can attach it to any object that has that property. I think within this ontology we should restrict ourselves to the abstract quantities.
I'm just going to agree and observe that the people on the phone that are nodding heads around the table at that point.
Joe Collins, from the perspective of a physicist, I would say both concepts are required. If you were to take the example of two sticks, they almost never have the same length. But if you were to look at elementary particles, they always have identical properties, at least from a theoretical perspective. So both would be required.
It seems to me that in this, I didn't understand the distinction that Ed is conveying, that it's the distinction is already in them, in the distinction between the concept of quantity and quantity kind.
No, it's a different idea. Quantity kind is the notion of length, as opposed to the notion of 30 centimeters measures. I mean, quantity kind is what some people refer to as dimension. Kind of quantity is length as opposed to mass.
Right.
But the issue here is that the mass of this desk is a particular quantity. But if you're going to try to compare it to something else, you can talk about the mass of this being less than or greater than the mass of some other piece of equipment in the room. But on the other hand, if what you're going to try to do, if what you want to talk about is what Hans-Peter just said, which is that the 400 kilograms exists on its own, then that 400 kilograms is somehow related to the mass of this desk, but it's not identical to.
I understand, but to me, what it would seem to me that if you could also argue that you could specialize the concept of mass, where it's not the mass of just any arbitrary thing, but, for example, the mass of, for example, my particular desk, and in that context then use that as what Vin says, something that you can actually compare, or use as a basis of comparison. But maybe not.
Here's the problem. This is really a very abstruse, almost philosophical issue. Here's the problem. If these particular quantities are understood in strictly in the way that the ontology will strictize them, so to speak, then they are individuated by the thing they're the, let's say, mass, because it's easier to talk about, the mass of. So if we have two protons, then in this sense, they cannot have the same mass quantity, because they're different protons.
Right.
No matter how exact, even if the current physics requires that the measure, as it were, of that mass will be identical, necessarily, some sort of...
Well, yeah, but the issue there is whether the photon owns the mass or whether it references the mass.
That's the way to put it, yes. Because if indeed ownership is the notion we want, then we really can't do the comparison. So as soon as we start comparing, we have to move to a slightly higher level of abstraction. And my view is we should have been there in the first place.
But isn't that the comparison what we do by measurement, right? We compare the measurements. We don't compare the actual, in a sense, quantity that is unique to one proton and the other quantity that is unique to the other proton. Because as you say, they're two distinct things.
Okay. Nicola, Chipmoss is next.
My comment actually had to do with bullet two, which is related to on the next slide. I guess my comment is that the degree to which we need to capture the distinction between Baylor vector sensor type quantities is going to be influenced by how deeply we want to model how quantities are derived from other quantities. If we just want to state what quantities are derived, then it's not so much important that we identify the type of mathematical object that expresses the value. But if we want to be able to actually model physical relationships, the physical laws, then we'll need to be able to distinguish between these.
Howard, if I may. Jamie?
Right, Jamie Clark, thought. It sounds like you have something approaching a rough consensus on abstract quality, but as far as the particular quantity is concerned, even if you drive it out of the room, it's still going to be lurking in the hallway. It's one thing to say formally the scope of this work is to capture, describe abstract quantities. It's another thing to say, and then when we force this on the world, we're going to have to explain to people that these are abstract quantities, and therefore, if you're reporting it in the context of a particular quantity, you have to explain from where it's derived. You have to, you're going to have a, something that goes along with the statement that's expressed in the work coming out of this project. It goes on to tell you where you got it from, and then it is particular and measured, and so forth and so on. So we're just shoving that problem out of the room with the scope. It doesn't make the problem go away. And you'll probably have to say something about it in an implementation guide or best practices or other guidance.
Or in the information model which references the ontology.
Yes. I would agree with that. I mean, you could have the same argument for an integer number, the number 2. You can associate it with any other object. And in a similar way, you can create a quantity of the 1,000 kilogram.
Well, if I may, I think the issue we cannot completely get rid of, and is honestly going to be lurking in the corridor, is the issue of particular measurements. I mean, that quantities are measured, and measurements are events that have the errors and uncertainties and all these sort of practical ways of being attached to the world. I think that's one issue, and a very important one, and one we should not ignore. I think we're making a mistake to identify that issue with this almost purely philosophical, logical kind of issue about exactly what's the nature of the things we want to ontologize.
because I don't think they're the same problem. I think we're hallucinating. We're going to form a trap if we think that by having particular quantities in this, quantities in our ontology, we are thereby facing up to the question of how to deal with the complicated issues of measurement. I don't think we are. And in fact, my belief is that particular quantities are almost completely useless in the ontology. They serve no function whatsoever. Anything that can be said by anybody or anybody wishes to say with them can be said without them. Better. I mean, that's to say, in the sense that the ontological description is clearer and simpler and more natural without them than with them. And that includes describing the particularities of acts of measurement. But that's, we're getting into content here in adventure.
Yeah, and I think we need to pull that fairly rapidly to close. Yeah. Currently on slide 3.
Well, yes. I think some of the other things are rather fast.
We're on line 1 of slide 3.
No,
2. Go next
slide. If I may, what Pat just raised is exactly where the NIST position comes in. And one of the concerns, for example, is that in each case, the definition of an SI unit is based on a particular quantity. It's a reproducible and, in that sense, extractable particular quantity. But it is one. And that goes to Joe's observation a few minutes ago. The physicists think in terms of particular quantity being the base. And so we will. The question is, does our model need to go there? And I think that's really what Pat was saying is that all of this is scientifically very important. It's not necessarily all that useful for the first level of the abstract ontology you're going to use. And I tend to agree with that. NIST's position notwithstanding, I absolutely agree with that.
In the Sigma code theme, what we've done is to have a slot for a specification of definition URI, which we intend to use for when we define a quantity kind or a unit. We intend to use the URI to refer to the ISO 80,000 spec where it's properly defined.
Okay.
And that's the way how we connect quantity kinds to this, let's say, physics-related standards.
Yeah. I think that's right. It's an external connection. Nicola has a hand up.
Nicola Guarino or Rico?
Yeah, hi. Yes, I just wanted, I'm not sure if I got the point. It seems to me that Pat and somebody else want to get rid of individual quantities, namely the length of this present conference, for instance, or things like that. I see the point that in many cases people only use the actual values or the actual things, but I believe we need a way to be able to answer to the question, what are you measuring? And the answer to this question is an individual entity, which is the actual length of this particular rod, which is different from the length of that particular rod. So it seems to me unavoidable to have a place for distinguishing between the actual physical quantities we measure. Otherwise, also people trying to understand this ontology would have problems also from the cognitive point of view.
We're really having a content argument here, but Pat Hayes again. One can speak of the length of a particular meeting without introducing an ontological entity, which is a length, and attach to that particular meeting. We do it all the time. We describe the lengths of meetings in hours and minutes. As soon as we do that, we are no longer talking about tropes. We're talking about properties of things. There's a meeting. They have the length, not the property of it. The value of that property is measured in hours and minutes. And in saying all of that, I have not referred to the length trope of the meeting. I don't need to. We should probably take this discussion offline. But I know, Mikola, you'll understand my point if you.
Well, I'm just saying, of course, there is a point, there is an aspect of discourse where the actual reference to the physical thing is not relevant. But there is, for sure, a time or a context where it is fundamental to distinguish whether the doctor was measuring the temperature of that patient or of the other patient. There is an identity problem.
Okay. I think the general feeling here is that we have identified a potential issue here which really covers the extent to which we refer to the other models outside the ontology, which provide the context in which we're coming up with a unit of measure. Let's take that as a potential area of issue and move on, because we...
I agree, Howard. I think this is precisely the point. I mean, this is an issue. We understand that it's an issue. Certainly we need to deal with the abstract quantities, and we will need to deal and decide what we're going to do about the particular quantities problem. Right? Jamie's right. It's going to be in the hallway no matter what we do with it.
But the question is whether when you've got two rooms coming off the hallway, which room is it going to be? Does it go into the product model, or does it go into the ontology measurement? And I think in terms of getting a simple and effective...
You do not want to argue with a physicist about that. Just trust me.
Can I make a just simple comment? In abstract modeling, however, quantity is an attribute of the object that you're modeling. It itself is not an object. Quantity is not an object by itself. It's an attribute of an object. So you have types of quantity, and where you can specify the kind of measurement that's been used.
You have various lifecycle views of that in terms of the as-designed length of an object, the as-manufactured length of the individual instances of that object, which you may well measure. And I think pulling out that clarification is useful, but let us move on, if you may, to slide four.
Yes. I'm hoping that slide four will go a little bit faster. I titled slide four dimensions, but the actual term that shows up in the VIM is kind of quantity. And the notion of kind of quantity, if you go down several bullets here, the one that says explicit model of the SI-based quantity, kind of quantity is, these are the names of kinds of quantity, length, mass, time, temperature, current. Those are kinds of quantity. They are dimensions, and in the sense that they are referring to the nature of the thing being measured. Which is the BIM view. It's about measurement. Okay. It's not accidentally called the vocabulary for measurement.
Okay.
And the nature of the thing being measured is, in some sense, what kind of thing the quantity is.
Right.
And obviously these have subtypes. One of the issues we got into is that you can subtype length. I mean, you can have multiple length dimensions. Multiple dimensions that are all quantity times length. That are different dimensions of a single object.
The three space.
And radius.
Can I make a remark?
All right. All of those are notions of length. But the whole point is that presumably we need to have these things in the model as a notion. And you're going to find that this leads to some interesting problems. But the first thought is we have to have it decide what the word is. The VIM word is kind of quantity. And I think David's model is quantity time to get around the of.
We missed you from the previous one.
Okay.
You have a hand up?
Yeah. This is Frank Holton.
I was pulling Chip up. Oh, sorry.
I would much prefer that we use dimension or dimensionality rather than quantity time, because I think that dimension or dimensionality is much more commonly known and used in the measurement community and will be easier for people to understand.
Dimensionality, because it can be compound.
Well, this is Chip Matthews. I think we both are distinct concepts.
That's correct.
dimensionality would help
the choice
of what your base quantities are.
That's correct, yeah.
And so, number one, I think, you know, quantity kind is a primitive notion. This notion of dimensionality only comes into play once you have a system of quantity. So unless we're going to commit to number two, second bullet, we would not necessarily need to have a model for this dimension. But my point, my preference would be to have both. We need to have model systems of quantities and express the mathematical formalism that you get when you identify base quantities and derive quantities.
Can I make another observation?
Hans Peter does have his hand up. So
yes, please. Well, I mean, I've been really reading the Zim, the VIM, very close, and quantity kind and dimensional are two distinct concepts, as Chip says. The dimension depends on what your selection of base quantities is. So you first need to choose what base quantities you want to use, and then from that you derive the dimensions for each quantity kind that you have in your system of quantities. So quantity kind and dimension are not the same kind of concept. They cannot be equated.
There are two things. One is quantity is how many when you have a whole, and then there is quantity how much. How much is weight, length, all the measurements. How many is, again, a quantity. How many apples? How many? Don't we have to take that? Those two different concepts?
With all due respect, Kavita, that is an issue that is simply one of those things that people have observed in BSI units simply don't bother to cover. How many is talking about a unit that is commonly commercially called count or each.
Yes.
It's simply a quantity kind that is different from length or mass or whatever, but it's not a quantity. But it's just a different kind of quantity. So I don't want to confuse that with the issue that is with quantity kind versus dimension. My understanding of the distinction between quantity kind versus dimension is that length is quantity kind, right? Whereas width and circumference and so on are dimensions. But that's the problem. What do you mean by the word? We're going to get into these confusions. One of them is measuring roll of length, and the other one is
right.
Abstraction is called length.
Where is it from?
Still have your hand up?
Maybe you want to put your hands down. Yeah, Roger.
Okay, Roger. Quick workout. Do you have your hand up?
You may be muted, so we can't hear you. Roger. Quick workout. Dog treat.
Yeah. Dog treat to unmute. Hearing none.
Nicola Quirino.
Okay. And go.
Well, I agree with those, the guy who pointed out the difference in VIM. The technical notion of dimension is really a completely different story. It's just two different quantities might have the same dimension. So it's a matter of deciding whether we want to stick to the technical notion of dimension or to the intuitive notion of dimension. I understand that in the common language, maybe you may confuse dimension with quantity kind, but technically it's a completely different story.
Nope. Joe Collins. Yeah, I mean, I've read over and over again the SI, and I have to say that the terminology encourages the translation of concepts. In particular, view graph, I would say dimension should always be the phrase quantity dimension, because that is what is defined in the SI. The genesis, the term alone, dimension, not specific enough. Not well defined.
Thank you for the helpful clarification. Thank you. So the kinds of quantity and kinds of dimensionality, particularly as they apply to derived quantities, and I can call them composite now.
No, not only to derived quantities, also to base quantities. A base quantity has a dimension which is the same as itself to the power of 1.
Okay. Or even 0. No, I won't even go there.
No, not 0. Not for a base quantity.
It was all about what the
definition
we're using for
this
first.
Yeah. You can have a dimensionless quantity, so a quantity dimension 0 is okay.
My apologies, I was being slightly frivolous there. But I think the clarification of the fact we need to consider kinds of quantities and kinds of quantity kinds and quantity dimensionalities is reasonable. Frank, are you happy with that as a split?
I'm confused at this point, but I think that, as I understand the conversation, we have a notion which has been called quantity times, or I would call it dimensionality, and then we have this, I guess what some people are calling dimension is a specialization of that to a role, such as radius or height or depth or something. And my suggestion is actually to avoid, and that's the use of dimension as it's used on a drawing or a part, where we say particular aspects of the part are dimensioned, or they have a, each of them is a dimension of the part. And my suggestion is we might clarify this by calling these things either quantity kind roles or dimension roles, to differentiate from this more abstract notion of dimensionality, or what I think is elsewhere referred to as quantity kind.
Well, I think the, let me test a hypothesis from a non-expert, which is that we have a quantity kind which is length, and we've got this thing called a quantity which is volume, which is length, and it's dimensionality 3. I think that's what we're saying.
Well, that's one thing. Volume is another quantity kind. I'm talking about the distinction between length as a quantity kind, or I'm calling it dimensionality now to differentiate it from its dimension. And dimensions of a particular part, which might be height, width, it's the bolt, the inside radius, and the outside radius. And those are locally referred to as dimensions. But I'm suggesting we call them dimension roles or something like this to make it really clear to people. We're making a distinction,
and they're
either that, or we should use call quantity kinds dimensionalities to differentiate from this dimension role.
Okay, it's purely the terminological point. I think that would be very confusing because dimension, that very English word, has such a very precise meaning in physics, and you know, we are having to deal with that very precise meaning, and the infrastructure of theory that surrounds it with physics and units and so forth. And I think that to use it in this rather looser, broader sense at the same time would be potentially very confusing.
I agree. If they can make a remark. I would say that things like radius or width or height or this kind of things are specializations of length, and they have the same dimension as length. That is, at least if you use the terminology of the VIM and the ISO standards.
Right. But the problem is, engineering practice is to refer to those as dimensions. So the problem we
that's using the word dimension in the sense of being a quantity, which is very confusing if you try to do a well-founded ontology of quantities and units.
Frank?
Yeah, just to reiterate what I said, because I think I talked across Nicola a minute ago. I think the problem we're
Hans Peter. Okay. I think the problem was that
we're using
one word, dimension, to mean
two slightly different things.
Somewhat different things.
And the two different things are
there's the use of the word dimension in physics, which is quantity kind, I think, as used here.
No.
Well, some people are disagreeing.
And the use of dimension in engineering,
which is, I'm calling a role, or some people here have said a specialization of a quantity kind.
Now,
Joe Collins and Jamie are shaking their heads.
I rely on Howard to keep it cute.
Okay, so you're done.
Okay, I'm done for right now.
I have a slight problem because I have to walk over and look at the screen to find the hands up on.
I'm Peter, you're up.
Did you have something?
No, I'm okay.
Right. If I may, speaking as somebody who's spent a great deal less time with his nose in the SR than most of you, but disturbing a lot of my time with my nose in standards committees. First of all, it is likely
that in order to complete this project, you will need a controlled vocabulary that answers some of the questions you are working on today. It is likely that you will not reach it in time to write a scope statement. That's a specific statement. Here's a general statement. This is a scoping discussion. Therefore, whenever you identify a little knot like this, the right thing to do is to say, aha, we have an interesting problem. Let's characterize it in a couple of sentences using polite words that do not step on anybody's ontological sensibilities. Noted as a problem for the committee to solve over the course of months, not hours, and move on.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ken. Okay, we have three more hands up on this. Let's go quickly, but I think what was said from the recent discussion is that the dimension role is out of scope of our ontology. I think our ontology needs to be able to connect to it. What we're looking at here is it's in other data models. In the product.
Howard, nobody else is doing it. I agree with you, but I don't think anybody else is doing it.
There is a distinction.
We don't get the feeling yet.
I believe you're right, but I don't think that everybody has that.
That's what we're trying on this. Let's work down the queue. Nicola?
You have your hand up? Which one, Nico Bueno or?
No, sorry, I forgot you. I'm fine.
All right, so it's Nicolas. I don't know if it was Chip who was talking about respectfully agreeing on ontological terms, or I'm not sure exactly how it was stated. And I agree with that. And one suggestion I'd like to make is that. The VIM has actually the benefit of having been vetted, in a sense, for literally centuries. And in my view, in QDV, we only took, I don't know, maybe 5%, not even, of that as a scope. And with all of the smart people who've done, you know, ontology for living for many years, I would really hope that in scoping this particular work, we really try to be very careful in making sure that all of the concepts of our ontology, all of the relations and what else, are really tied and traceable to them, such that ideally, at the end, we could have almost say we've actually defined the ontology of them. We've not invented anything. We've just turned them from something that is described in French and in English into something that is described as a formalized ontology.
Thank you.
Who was it?
That was Nicholas.
Oh, okay.
Would people on the phone please announce yourself so that we can document who
said what? Also people in the room.
Yeah.
Right. Chip, you're in.
Chip Matthews, am I going to suggestion for the terminology, but I'm talking about a dimension is a dimension is a system dimension. Specific to a system of quantities and I think if we were to, that should be the term we could use is the system dimension, because you can't talk about the dimensionality of quantities unless you know what system you're expressing them. I'm going to post a link to an oldie but a goodie reference on that.
That's great. And I think we're now getting to the stage of identifying clearly that we have a problem with multiple interpretations of the word dimension, which we will need to clarify, and that may have some impact within the scope statement. Peter?
I actually want to endorse Nicholas Roquette's position that we should stick to the Vim as much as we can, and we should be extremely careful if we're unpredictable or change or add new concepts other than specialization and the clarifications of the Vim.
It's Vim.
While I am fully in agreement with that statement, I share Joe Collins' view that certain things, especially in Chapter 1, conflate more than some issues, and that causes the problem. I think in particular, the Vim is fairly clear on the fact that it's not clear on what exactly it means by quantity. It uses two different definitions in different places, and it says basically they couldn't agree on what the term was going to be. Okay? And I think the same problem, it is pretty clear about what when it uses the dimension. The issue with respect to dimension is whether that's what everybody else uses the word to mean. And so we're going to have this problem in all we do. We can follow the Vim, but we have to be careful because the Vim ultimately was written by physicists, not engineers, and that's part of the problem.
I think as far as the conflation part is concerned, specialization and clarification probably should be in order. But where we're changing the labels and things, I guess it's
lobby. But I agree with your position.
Okay,
can we move on to scope quickly? Yeah, remaining scope issues on this page. Now that we know how we need to have a better discipline for doing this. Do we agree that we're going to need to model the system?
Everybody is afraid that we said, yeah, you can't do it without,
right? We're going to need a system of quantities notion, which means we have these ideas like base quantity and derived quantity. There is an issue about whether we are going to model any system other than SI. Presumably we will want to model the basic elements of the SI system directly, and we may use those as the ontological basis for talking about dimension. I assume that's what we're going to do. There are other the problem is you pick a set of nominally orthogonal quantities. They don't have to have been the ones the SI chose. And in fact, there is some bit of electronics, I think, in which the conventional set of meters really isn't based exactly on the SI. Is that right?
The common system of units due to use of something or other, the base unit of a set of electronics, isn't actually doesn't directly map onto one on the side, but you've got to do it as a transformation.
Repeat the question again.
The issue
here is only for the scope of this thing, can we present ourselves with the idea that we're going to model the notion system of quantities and base quantity and derived quantity. And then let's set that we are actually going to model as base quantities are the SI one. And we don't need to model any other set. We need to create the basis on which somebody else can model another set of base quantities if they want to, but we're not going to do that.
One point on that. From a practical point of view, we certainly want to do SI. You know, whether others are included or not, like be driven by whether we recognize there would be a community that would want to use them. Another, perhaps more philosophical issue is one might want to introduce multiple systems of quantities in order to illustrate properties such as natural systems of units or coherent units And
mm-hmm.
So now again, this might be out of scope, but if, you know, I just point out that if we wanted to talk about or have a model for natural units, we'd want to have a system like Planck units or atomic units.
Bonjour et bienvenue à l'Agence spatiale européenne. Nous vous remercions de votre appel et vous prions de patienter quelques instants. Welcome to the European Space Agency. Thank you for your call. Please hold the line a few moments. Pour en savoir plus sur l'Agence spatiale européenne, nous vous invitons à visiter notre site web www.esa.int. To know more about the European Space Agency, why not consult our internet site on www.eso.int.
Kelvin has his own way of measuring temperature. Uses, you know, so there's somewhere over there in Budapest, there's a degree spread. We want to know what uses a degree spread do to approach this model and discover the Kelvin that they're going to and what to do about it and how to cope with the degree spread issue in the context of that model. At least you ought to have a methodology to get somebody from some, you know, hypothetical measurement unit that needs to be normed against this to a conclusion that they either can or cannot directly derive from the model.
There is a difference between systems of units and systems of quantity. The degree spread is still temperature.
Okay.
What we're talking about here is whether the base quantity is going to be temperature or the base quantity is calories or something like that. So you have to, you know, it's a difference.
Unit comes afterwards.
This moment we're talking about
systems. There you go, right. Temperature versus calories. That's right. Yeah. I mean, the issue here is system quantity, not
And I'm going to say the same thing over the pitch degrees track. I mean, you need to have some way for somebody who's approaching this to do it and doing something that turns out to be calories to know
whether or not they're on the same page you are and what to do about it. In the context of the model, well, yeah, I mean, if you look at this, if the ontological conclusion you can't get here from there, that's okay too. But they need to be able to, you know, reach production, reach conclusion about whether they can take the things they're measuring and norm against this. I'm saying that's something you can interrogate the model. Not, oh yeah,
there's two levels of this. One is the quantities that are defined, or the units that are defined for the same quantity kind of dimensionality, forgive the imprecise use of those, but we haven't defined them yet. Just some scale factors in. And I think what I'm hearing is a general feeling that we need to be able to accommodate those. And there may be two levels. One is the thing that we know about feet and tons, we may not know about fret.
I've never assumed that was an issue. The issue here is whether we need to model this on the quantity.
It turns out fret measures calories, not the temperature.
And the issue here is the problem in particular that Chip alludes to is that in certain physical domains, you don't distinguish length of mass aren't your base quantity. And that's sort of what you're, one of the problems is you end up with this coherent system. And you're not yet talking about whether you're measuring the mass in grams or in pounds or in what you're talking about at this point is whether mass is a base unit. In particular, when you start getting into the energy domain, there's lots of different ways to do base.
Let me be a little more explicit. The SI system of units uses current as the base quantity.
Right.
And then it defines charge as current times time. It could have chosen, if they were chemists, for example, they could have, and I think some systems actually did choose charge as their base unit, and then defined current as charge per unit time. That's the distinction, I think, that Ed is trying to make. And that is a distinction which has to be addressed before you get into worrying about the individual units.
Right.
Thank you. So it's clear to me, for example, that SI was developed by engineers and not chemists and physicists.
Okay. So if I can Peter, the QUDV model has a full model of these concepts of systems of quantities, and you can do multiple systems of quantities and compare dimensions between them and compare units and derive automated unit transformations and do dimensional analysis on quantity equations.
Thank you.
Hans-Peter, welcome back.
Thank you.
Right.
Nicola Torino.
Yes, I just wanted to say something about dimensions, and the last point made by Frank Hawken was very relevant concerning charge and the current and so on. And it is evident in that case that the dimension, the actual dimension changes depending on your particular wave system. And so this is clearly enough for the difference between the two notions, the notion of quantity and quantity kind and notion of dimension. By the way, another example, another observation concerning the difference between the two is the following. Quantity kind do have instances, namely single quantities. Dimensions don't have instances. So dimensions are associated, so to speak, are the result of putting in relation a wave system to a particular quantity kind.
Okay. I think we've flagged dimensions as being an ongoing issue on that. The question before us is the extent to which we want to cover these additional models within the ontology. Are there multiple views that we need to address? And does it actually make a difference to the underlying set of relationships between quantity kinds?
This is Frank Hawkins. I think it's likely that we need to build a ontology that could handle other systems of quantities. Whether we tail them or not in our ontology, I think, is a separate question. And the question you asked, the question, does it matter? And unfortunately, I think it does matter. Because I think some of these other exotic systems that someone once mentioned in an earlier phone conversation require that we express some dimensions in terms of the square root of other dimensions, which is not anything that SI directly requires. So it affects the kind of arithmetic we need to have built into the system, unfortunately. I've actually never encountered those before.
Which leads us to the next bullet, if I may.
My point is also it has to do with that result. But I will say that basically, I think it was me that made that comment in the last one of the previous phone calls, and it had to do with being able to express like charge in terms of a force using Coulomb's law, I guess, or Ampere's law, for different points.
The next issue is exactly that one. Is it correct to assume that the scope will prefer to include the idea of derivation of derived quantity, that is, expression of a way of expressing a derived quantity in terms of base quantities? And that gets you into exactly the issue that Frank was talking about, because when you express a derived quantity in terms of base quantities, you come into the question of what kinds of operations you might need other than the conventional idea that it's some set of powers, right, of base quantities. And that is the question, from my point of view. Do we assume that's the end? Can we just, does anybody, agree that the United Nations should support some means of support a means of carry-derived quantity as a derivation from base quantity.
I disagree.
Okay.
Because then if you bring in the scope and the have an ontology for all of the mathematical operators that are used to compose these things, you need cross products and dot products and you know an entire vocabulary for expressing those if you want to capture every derivation. So I mean, I guess just truly in terms of trying to limit the scope, I would say not.
We don't have to have a complete theory of derivations in order for ontology derivations to be done.
So you want to say, like, this means, you know, this quantity is derived from B, but not necessarily what the mathematical expression is.
Yeah.
So that I would agree with.
This is an answer to the point. In the, again, in the QFG model, we have put these definitions for the derived quantities and derived units in, and it's relatively, it's really simple mathematics to do these derivations. I mean, we don't go beyond the normal scale of products of powers.
Thanks, Lance. I was about to say that both ZIN and QDV actually do provide support for other systems of units and quantities explicitly. It is just that the SI units and system of quantities, in a sense, is a library that ISO 80000 now provides, but there's no constraint that forces anyone from using all of it or a subset of it. And whether one wants to do like what Frank was talking about, a chemical point of view and choose what from the point of view of SI units or SI quantities would be a derived quantity as the base, it is possible and it is the case that we specifically discussed in the context of the development of the QDV for CCNL because we wanted to make it possible for people to actually to do this and have the capability to reason whether the units have coherence and whether the dimensional analysis would actually be well-founded. And as Nicola Guarino mentioned, there is a distinction between a dimension and a quantity kind, and that distinction is also reflected in them, and we captured that as well in QDV. And indeed, it does make a difference as far as where the relations have to be in the ontology.
Sounds to me as though relationships are not out of scope of the rule of law. Okay.
When I wrote the Citigroup Global Technology Infrastructure, we specified some of this as just including another attribute called the system kind, system independent of its measurement system, whether it is NPS or any while capturing the information, you would specify what system that you're using the measurement, for example, NPS. So all the types of measurements would fall into that particular system, lens, width, mass.
Okay, so nice. Thank you.
The next issue, which I hope is going to go fairly quickly, everybody seems to agree that we're going to model systems for the obvious reason. And you do have this problem that there are, for example, two SI systems, the MKS and the CGS system. But the one of the questions then is, we will presumably, instead of, we don't stop with the kind of, the bottom line is, we will obviously have a class called unit of measure or measurement unit, which is what the term is, or something of that form. The question is, and we will have a system of quantities, and we will have, it will be based on the system of quantities. There will be a system of units, so we will understand that part. The question is, which individual units will we actually put into the ontology itself? And the presumption is obviously certainly the SI base unit, meter, gram, second, and so on. And the one of the questions is, then do we do more explicit units than that? And do you put joules in the ontology itself, for example? And the other question is, what do you do about the metric prefixes? I mean, if you do CGS and MKS, you're already dealing with centis and kilos. And now the remaining question is, all of a sudden you have essentially a set of things that sort of are kind of derived units, which are simply metric powers of 10 times base units. And so you have that problem, and so what do we do about those? Are we going to model that? Is one of the questions. And are we going to put other explicit units in? Basically, there's a whole set of things like fuel, and cylinder and common use. And so do we put all of those into the ontology, or do we go to the other way, which is the whole set of explicit units and explicit derived units? Or do we go the other way and say, after some point, that we're going to do just to get the baseline in there, everything else is going to be relegated to a library of derived units sort of behavior, like QUDV. And then you ask, well, what do you do? And then the question will be, how do we relate to the library? So that's what this issue is about. So it seems to me that Günther even mentioned that, nobody in his right mind would say you're going to make an ontology which you're going to name every unit people are going to use. It's just not going to happen. Okay? So can we agree that the ontology itself will probably stop with the SI base unit and the metric prefix thing somewhere? And then what? Do we put other things in, or do we lump everything else into derived units that get defined somewhere else?
Okay. Thank you, Joe. I think the answer to that is straightforward. For one clarification, it wasn't apparent to me that CGS units are part of SI at all. But barring that issue, there's a finite number of named derived units in SI, finite number of base units, finite number of prefixes.
Yeah.
So that decides the problem. We only do SI units.
Thank you.
Yes, I would say what we've done in the R-model of the QDV is to have a base ontology which only defines the concepts, and then we have an SI IFQ ontology which imports the basic ontology and defines the base quantities and units for SI. And also the 20, I think 27 derived units with special names, as they're called.
I absolutely agree with your notion of separating out the commitment in different sub-ontologies. I'm going to try and do that as far as possible in the common logic version.
Okay. Thank you, Jamie.
You might consider taking on SI as your first deliverable within the scope. And then leaving it to the committee itself how much farther one can go with specifying things other than simply providing a model for derivation, which you've got to do. If you've got a model for derivation, whether you want to go deeper than that is something you can leave to the group itself once it gets underway, as long as it understands it has to not involve the SIs first.
That sounds sensible because you're effectively getting the fundamentals in there and applying scale factors later.
That, by the way, is there anybody else online? Because that leads me to the next question. The question we dealt with respect to the library of derived units problem is that there are already libraries out there in different forms. In particular, for example, and I'm going to leave off the first bullet is a how, so I'm going to leave that off. This is this issue about if we're going to, the presumption is there are libraries out there. So
the question is, do you just assume that libraries will somehow develop ontology to match the library? Somebody will develop an ontology that matches the library entries, and that will become essentially a derivative ontology of what we're doing and will be published separately, which is sort of in the published extension category. Or do we assume that there is some way in which we can do something directly with the libraries that are there? In particular, the UCUM and UNFML group both are repositories, or have repositories, of units and unit definitions and so on, and unit symbols and the whole nine yards. So the ontology, they're basically databases. The issue is, what do you do with those things? Because this might be a question that's simply something that we can address as something to worry about when we have nothing else on our plate, which might be the best way to look at that. But it does get us into this issue about how much we're going to do, how much we're going to assume other people will do as extensions to the ontology, and whether we can have some relationship to these other repositories automatically in some sense to get to the ontology, sort of what I would say. Because the thing is, we have, as participants, guys who are in fact involved in the maintenance of both of those registers. So neither of them is here, so maybe the appropriate choice is to say, we'll leave this issue to a later time. I think
the scope of the committee will need to include identifying how extensions can be made and adopted.
Certainly we will have to do that. That's coming later anyway.
And that comes down to whether or not you make a set of rules that says anything that obeys this set of rules is automatically included, which is the registration authority. Or the maintenance agency says if somebody wants to put in a new unit, it comes to us to approve. I think we need to cover that and
interestingly enough, by the way, the units and all people operate as a registration authority idea. Here's how you do it. If you do it, we accept it.
Right.
But the UCUM view is you come to us and you ask.
One thing, there is actually a routing between that, which ISO is now using in terms of managing standards for databases. And Peter, you have your hand up?
Sorry, I forgot to take it down.
Great.
Last bullet on this slide, Jamie mentioned a few minutes ago, is there any objection to the idea that we should in fact model unit derivation? We need a model of unit derivation as the guidance for how people will in fact, what ontological concepts people will use in describing derivation. Yeah. Otherwise we will get, every ontology will be different.
You have to find some way in which the extensions are related to the core.
Right, which means we need to have a model of what derivation looks like. The concept is the derivation, which is the issue that you have read. If you do derivation, you have to have a model of the concept of the use of derivation so that the name is being used across the sets of people who extend the ontology of the same one.
So I agree with you that we're going to have to model derivation of units. I think the question is, which Joe sort of alluded to, and I think Pat has sort of alluded to on occasion, is do we attempt to axiomatize arithmetic, or do we simply say if we have multiplication, division, and some of these other operators and leave them as absent formal definitions, we simply put in English text, at least have the conventional definitions and use them as base predicates.
Okay, I think that's something that needs to be looked at. We've been saying we need the capability and we need to work out how best to do it.
Yeah, wow. Just for the record, it's fact. You can formalize with the hell, and I'm damned if I'm going to do it in common logic, so I think that rules that in.
Okay, Nicola
Roquette,
please. Ben
Roquette.
Hello?
Sorry, I was on mute.
In QEDV, we actually, as Hans-Peter mentioned before, introduced a simple model of derivation that allows someone to express direct quantity as a simple combination of factors on other quantities, and the same thing for the units. And we actually use that as the basis to specify the semantics of a dimensional analysis, which we included in the CNL appendix C5. So the point there is that we tried hard to be actually Vim compliant in doing this. It's possible that we may have perhaps missed some things, but unless that turns out to be the case, support for derivation of units and quantities is there, and more importantly, it's done in a way that actually is compatible for reasoning about dimensional analysis.
Okay. Thank you. Roger.
Expanding on that, we actually distinguish conversions between units versus derivations of quantities, and just as previously noted, we just do the simple forms of linear arithmetic or linear plus a base, and then bail out into a string-based expression, and with quantities, we just do exponent powers of base quantities. I would say from a practical point of view, including conversions between units and any sort of system of units is a real practical need for using these kinds of libraries. So I would endorse including it in the scope.
So we need to cover derivations
Just basic conversions, which will cover virtually everything. We do get logarithmic units, but providing a placeholder where this can be covered through a less formal way would be sufficient.
And that's the sort of stuff you get if you type two units into Wolfram Alpha and get the conversion factor.
Okay, let's press on.
We're getting there.
We're fine. Sick. The next one is about scales. One of the issues is whether scales are in scope or not. Right there. Are quantity scales in scope or not? The problem with scales actually breaks down into the two bullets immediately below that. The distinction between scales which are simply, which are unanchored, if you like, or anchorable anywhere in a certain sense, like length, in which you can start the zero point somewhere and you're measuring the quantity between two points, versus the idea of an absolute scale where the concept of temperature only has meaning with respect to a reference state. And that's also true of mass. Mass is absolute, temperature is absolute. And the issue is, do we get into this, is what it really comes down to. Do we need these notions? One of the problems is trying to talk about temperature quantities is pretty hard to do if you don't have a notion of scale. This is what the issue really is. Do we need these notions? And then after the three, which are all really one big issue, the ones beyond that are how much more trouble do we want to get into? Right, because immediately you start talking about scale, somebody brings up Rockwell hardness, which is bullet 5 on that list, okay?
Yeah.
It's not as high, no, but as I said, immediately you bring up scale, somebody starts talking about Rockwell hardness, okay? So the issue is, if we start going down this slope, how far do we want to slide before we put on the brakes?
So I can make a remark on this. Peter DeConi. We included scales like this in the 14 model, in the CNL model, because also if you want to do automated conversion between quantities which are which have an absolute scale, you need this. And Also, in system engineering or in many other engineering plays, it's very important to also be able to have these nominal scales or reference scales or even simple things like like you have a quantity which you call priority, you have a low, medium, high, which you, in the trade study, you relate to the numbers 1, 2, and 3, or 0, 1, and 2, things like that, which can be covered then using the same model for quantities.
Thank you. We have a new guest in the room. If you could introduce yourself, please.
I'm Evan Wallace from NIST. And I had a question about one of the comments you made it sound like we might be scoping just SI. Was that a decision made? Or?
So the scoping that we're looking at is starting with SI and then working, adding ontology, sub-ontologies onto that to support other systems.
Okay. Yeah. The core ontology would just include SI, and other systems or units would be extensions.
My question on this one is the first three, isn't that part of the derivation?
I think no. The point here is, should the ontology attend to something like a general theory of scales and types of scale and characterize them in some way, and then locate SI system, for example, within this larger framework? Right? That's the idea of nodding.
Okay. We have online Nicola Carina.
Yes, I guess beginning with scales is unavoidable, unfortunately. I'm aware of the complexity, but I guess it is unavoidable. Also, a question I'm asking myself is whether, for instance, we want to distinguish between resistance and conductance. This is quite intriguing to me. So you have a piece of metal, okay, a piece of conductor, a given resistance. You measure the resistance in a certain way, and you also measure the inverse. You can also speak in terms of the inverse of this quantity. And is it the same quantity, the same individual quantity? Okay, yes. I guess, yes. Still, the L are different, yet related. Well, it's a puzzling story. And I recently stumbled into a book discussing about these things by Albert Tarantola, well, it really intrigued me. I don't have a clear answer to the point, but I believe we should be aware of these things.
Thank you for that added complexity, which I think is somewhere between bullets 4 and 5 on that.
Nicola, what was the author or title of that book again?
Yeah,
type it into the chat room, please.
That'd be great, thank you. What I'm hearing is that we can't avoid scales. At least the first three.
We need to have an ontology for scales that we hope is consistent with the BIM ideas, and then assume that the SI ones are a specific case. Is that the agreement? Right. Are there objections to a unanimous consent? Now the question can we get on the bullets 4 and 5 quickly or not, which is, do we need a model to deal with scale, to deal with anything or a scale that isn't effectively a scalar, based or not based or unbased, but still that isn't effectively the linear, because the whole idea of those scales is that whether there's a base aspect or not, you have this ratio notion, which has something to do with identifying the role of units. Once you get into nonlinear scales, the role of the unit in the scale is more interesting. The classic example of bullet 4 there, which is nonlinear scales, is sound intensity, which is measured in decibels usually, and the relate it's an exponential logarithmic relationship to energy. And of course the last one is the worst case, which Nicola, is that right? right. You somebody observed that we're not data, so we really do need the idea of reference scale. Where to deal with a case where things are simply not in ordering and you place yourself within that ordering.
I think we can do all these. I don't think our discussion should be predicated on the assumption that all this is very hard to do. The reference scale is extremely difficult to acclimatize. If anything, the problem is to have something to say about it rather than.
Can we say that we need to cover the linear scales linked to the Vim and also give consideration to other types of scaling that may be required? But again, this has got to be driven by the business need. Okay. Unit conversion.
Yeah, there's only one question here. Do we do it or do we don't? We're not going to talk about how. The question is whether.
Yeah, we do it. Otherwise, we're wasting our time. Is there any disagreement with that viewpoint?
No, because I'm starting to corner. We have a full algorithm to be able to make the unit conversions, which can be given. It's relatively simple to do.
I think until
I put you in a room with a shadow.
Fine.
I'd love to disappoint you for that if you could sing along.
Thanks, guys. I think I'm hearing you. Steve.
This is Steve. I heard Chip talk earlier about the concerns we've had about mathematical operators you would have to include.
Well, that was more to do with we wanted to have an explicit model of physical laws that relate quantities together. And in this case, we're just attempting to do with. Thank you.
One.
What?
Well, we
we certainly want to do it later. The question is whether we put it on the list of things we can't do that at all.
You will open up the requirement to link to a vast range of other PTs who do all sorts of measurement activities on this. TP213 from India.
213 is a different matter. We'll come to that in the next slide.
There is
a relationship to measurement in TC213, I don't want to go there either.
In terms of this activity, if we're modeling the fundamental relationships between units, why would we want to do this? This should be in the external controller.
Well, this is where we separate the application. The physicists are clearly excited about this, and it's not just the physicists. I mean, there's a whole set of issues that relate to how you model measurement.
And that's mostly what the VIM and the GUM are about, which is how you go about modeling measurement and what you record when you make the model. I noticed, for example, the CHIPS ontology, 2DUT, actually ventures into this area, presumably because it was a requirement of the application you were using.
No.
I wonder, it seems to me that if we say nothing about this at all, about measurement, if we ignore it, then we're seriously hampering the utility of what we do, because there will be areas of discussion and doubt about how to apply what we have done to anything involving any kind of measurement, and we will have simply left that a blank. I think we can say enough to clarify the intent of how it should, what we do should relate to that topic without delving to that topic and completely encompassing their scope. I think there's a sort of delicate scope issue here that we should be willing to provide enough text or explanatory material as part of what we do that would help people relate what we do to that area without claiming that that area is either entirely within our scope. I know it's a delicate matter, but it's a line to draw, but we need to draw that line.
Could we cover that by putting in the scope need to establish the relationship between unit definition and the nominal values, actual values, measured values, etc.?
I prefer if you just that to measure rather than particular. I think there's a philosophical problem in there.
If it's going philosophical, we can discuss it down. Okay, so I think that one covers that file.
Good, then let's go on to at that rate, we will not get deeply into uncertainty. If you make a measurement, you have uncertainty. That is the critical idea from the physicist side of it.
Running into crunch now,
right? I understand. That's what I said. We're now on to the ones that are fringe issues. So the next one is the one that is actually the commercial situation. This is the one you were done by, which is TC213 domain. The TC213 goes into this in great detail, which is the idea of specification and tolerance. When, for example, you label your bag of flour 1 kilo,
how accurate is that required to be?
That is a commercial issue. I can tell you it's an important commercial issue.
How many grams did you wrong by?
Makes a big difference.
Everything
to do with commercial requirements. There was an enormous review in the U.S. a number of years ago when we went from the traditional fifth, which is 756 milliliters, to the traditional European 750 milliliter bottle of wine. Because that 6 milliliters, of course, was an amount of fluid that was a different amount and had something to do with price. And so all of these issues are concerns to commercial sales. So the idea here is that when you write a specification for anything for a nominal value, there is usually an implied tolerance. And the question is, do we touch that stuff or do we stay 10 meters away from it? Okay, and if we go there, then that fits Pat's previous observation. We need to talk about how we're going to use this without actually getting into models.
Well, again, it's very similar in context to the difference between measured values and actual values. Well, the tolerance is both talking about two individual units. He's about the same.
Yeah, I think we've got to be very careful about measurement and uncertainty in measurement. the specification, tolerance in the specification. One is descriptive, and one is prescriptive. And this is the first slide where it's ventured into the prescriptive world, which is quite different from the descriptive world. Actually, no, because uncertainty can be viewed in terms of classical statistics, but tolerance cannot be viewed in terms of classical statistics. And classical statistics is based upon the principle of sampling, and then gets into the whole philosophical discussion, which has been in the DIPM and BIM, regarding the existence or non-existence of a true value versus a measured value. And some school, at least one school of thought believes there is no such concept of a true value. There's only measured value. However, I believe in the European school of thought, that's not true. But I don't want to get into that discussion, but that's all in the descriptive world. This is quite different. You don't have to have uncertainty in your tolerance specification. You can say it exactly as precisely as you want. It's entirely under your control what you state as a prescription.
Does that impact on ontology?
I'm wondering whether we need to go into the prescriptive world at all. We're talking about ontology of
3 kilograms plus or minus 5 grams.
That's a prescription.
Outside the scope of this ontology. think I'm going to converge this to a point where we probably do not need to consider it in a first release, because it's essentially an externally modeled activity.
Are we going to consider measurements for certainty?
I thought the impression we have is that both of these will happen. We need to address in the ontology guidelines
whatever
we
do
about how you can use these things. And it's probably somebody else's observation, that what we're really expecting to do with this is the first deliverable from this project will not include these things in any detail. In fact, it may not include any of the English language.
Okay,
it says, we'll go on, here's the basic idea.
Right.
And what we will do, but we've made promise that the committee will not go out of existence when we've made the first deliverable.
And
in that case, these things then become four items for the committee to deal with as a future thing. But it clearly also means you're going to need different expertise. Once you start dealing with specification and tolerance, and one of the problems with something like TC213 is that they actually have to deal with the issues of tolerance of roll-ups and tolerance and interactions and tolerance requirements and all of these things. Because you're dealing with engineering.
Yeah, I think the question on the table is whether we're going to have an uncertainty back in the measurement side.
What we had said was that we wanted to establish at least some guidance as to how this relates to uncertainty.
Okay, authorization.
I'm starting to get to the
question.
We're now to the end, I'm hoping. I thought we'd already seemed to have come to this. So the next question is, with respect to the first question, should we divide the ontology into modules?
Right.
I think the answer is yes. The question is going to be what the modules are, right? We're not talking about one massive ontology. We are actually intending to make this multiple interlinked bits.
So that
we can add on in an orderly way without screwing up the things about the problem here is the RDF graph problem. What you want is that there's a corpus that people can import as a body without getting a bunch of simple definitions they weren't expecting to get.
And or
among the big axioms they weren't expecting to get. And if we modularize the thing, then you can actually do it as quantities and units and scale and so on, which is one of the issues. And it gives us the opportunity to separate ideas like measurement and specification or whatever in the separate bucket.
Right.
Does everybody agree that that's the way we want to go about it? I mean, this isn't really a scope issue so much as an approach, but it has something to do with what's going to happen.
And
another question. So I know that there are attempts underway to put modularization into OWL2. I don't know what the status of modules are in CLIP.
Oh, CLIP has a robust modularization syntax built in, lets you easily modules have names, they can be imported to other modules, and they the language makes it easy to restrict quantification within a module to a subcategory, subclass of things. So you can be only talking about measurements or whatever you want to talk about without having to constantly say for all X is a measurement then. Which saves a lot of typing. And that's very, very similar to OWL, actually modeled on the OWL, but with the addition of the risk shock and automatic. Okay, it's a simplistic mechanism, but it's just...
I think the point there is that we want a modular structure so that we can add on components, and we can also import without dragging everything that's inherited from by the add-ons. It's just important.
Actually, imports is transitive, I'm afraid, yeah.
But
I think you want that.
Yeah.
You want it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine. Okay.
There are some problems you can get into, but...
Yeah.
But let's not get into...
Right, yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
I,
I think that's probably right. The idea of explicit micro-theories, which is John Polo's comment, is that once you're talking about explicit micro-theories, you're actually saying that the axioms in these theories might be contradictory. That is to say, there's no need for these to be, you want everything to be consistent with the core, but they don't need to be consistent with each other, which is another matter.
There is also another, I mean, many of the uses of that, that's micro-theories is a term in psych. And in psych, what can also happen in a micro-theory, and psych is a point of them, is that a name can mean something different in a micro-theory than it means outside the micro-theory. The meanings of the for names can change. So the micro-theory is sort of perspective on what a name means. That's a very powerful device, but it's also a very risky one met in the standard, frankly. I'd rather we didn't go there. There is a much more you can get something of the same effect in common logic, actually in some real life applications, by explicitly using as name a term which consists of a binding of a coded name and something that indicates the context is understood. That has the advantage, by the way, you can then quantify all those subscript effects. You can essentially subscript a name with an indicator of the context. And you then talk about the context explicitly I might try and do that, although it's going to go syntactically hairy, as a way of keeping track, for example, what mass means in one system unit as opposed to other system units. You know, you might want to actually keep track of those so that the names themselves inherit pointers to the ways in which they're meant to be understood. There are a lot of machines. There's a variety of kinds of syntactic machinery one can utilize, I guess.
So I think we're covering this by saying that we do want a modular structure which will support the add-ons in an appropriate way. We will inevitably have to struggle over the right level of granularity.
Yeah, right. We have not made a commitment to hold long by microphones.
Correct.
No, we don't want to do that. I think the next bullet down, prioritization of deliverables, really belongs to the standards plan. I mean, this is what are we going to do first?
The deliverables. I think we said things like SI and then factors and then factors and other systems.
I think we come back to that because that's part of the standards plan as opposed to whether we're going to do it or not. It just means that there are some systems which is the it goes on the back end of that list. And the last thing, though, is rather important, which is this issue of we assume that it's going to be in scope to provide some sort of guideline for how extensions are going to work. What do you expect the extensions of this policy to look like? And that was part of the question. There are some things that we presumably will deliberately leave to such extensions. We don't believe the committee ought to be doing. The DC probably won't do that. We might expect some other will.
Obviously, that itself is a standard.
And that's all going to be in the paper.
So
But I'm assuming that we're going to be compliant with ISO, I guess it's now 8000.
80,000.
80,000.
ISO 8000 is
basic quality. Yeah, so we're going to get you back. 80,000. That is, I think we need to make it clear within the scope that we're not proposing to redefine base units for the SI system or any such thing. Because we don't have the right people here, and I think that the world would just ignore us. So I think we need to make that really clear in the scope document. So as to not annoy the established measurement authorities. And cause alarm and various sorts of quantum, because I know they're tinkering, they're proposing to tinker with the definition of the kilogram, and I think we'll take whatever they do. What?
The realization of the kilograms, I can't think of it. How one realizes it.
I would think also the NIST special publication on the accepted conversion factors to refer system of units would be a good candidate to use as a for an extension to show how you can relate imperial units to the SI units and use the agreed conversion factors which are in this, I don't remember the number, but it's a special publication from NIST.
Frankel from here, yes, but I don't think it's actually imperial units. I think it's conventional English units, which are as you
okay, yeah, well.
This is a problem with gallons, I know.
Well, and gallons and DCUs and all this stuff. It would just show an extension to do a number of images which capture, which let's say, ontologize this special publication. Which is a very good example of how you can use it in practice.
Okay. I think we can add that.
Yeah.
To the list of documents, and I'm sure there are some other conversion factors there as well. I think you can cover. So I open the floor, noting we're 25 minutes into the lunch break, for anybody to bring up any other issues.
Any other scope issue.
Correct.
I have a comment. I would suggest to pay attention to the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule, and when you get something that looks like it's pretty ready for publication, please publish it. Don't continue to tweak it, add as an item, and stretch the schedule out forever.
Thank you, Jeremy. Secretary of SC4. Hearing no other, I think we can...
Nicholas will get.
Okay.
Yes, I would second what the Secretary of SC4 said, and in practical terms, it really boils down to what repository can we provide an electronic form for facilitating any change of various artifacts that makes sense to look at in developing this work. And if someone has already figured out essentially where this repository is and has sorted out the implications about whether that implies ownership, transfer of intellectual property and all of this stuff, then that'd be great. And I'll listen for the suggestions you might have.
I think that's standardization effort, which is in the afternoon, right?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, everybody, for their contribution. I'm sorry that we've run on, but I think it's important to air a number of these issues, and I think it's given us some good guidance on
what we need to do on the charter, which we'll look at after lunch before going into the work on content and the individual work plan. Just as a note for those in the room, Frank, it's lunch on your own downstairs somewhere.
We need to decide how long we're going to allow for lunch when we come back. Even getting a sandwich will be at least half an hour. If we can actually go and sit down someplace, we're talking about an hour.
Can we bring food back to you?
Yes, we can bring food here. And I believe we can. We can do it in every other conference room. I suspect we can do it here. I've seen advisory committees of size get here and eat in the room. So hopefully we will not leave too much of a mess.
So let's bring out that we get back.
An hour?
Is that really going to work? I mean, I don't know where the sandwicheries are.
They're all within a block. So you can either go north or you can go south. I mean, and you can get... If we go... Okay. So you guys all have temporary badges, which means I think you can walk out the south door, but you can't get back in the south door. Without an escort. So to get back in, you'll have to go in the main entrance the way you came in this morning. So if you walk across, come out the south elevator, which we are almost adjacent to. You go down, you'll come out the south side of the building, across the street is the big mall. If you take the escalator down one floor, Actually, there's a sandwich shop to your right as you enter, there's a noodle shop to your left, and then if you take the escalator down, there's a big food court with, you know, McDonald's and all these sorts of things. Alternatively, you can walk around the north side, come out the north entrance, or go up across the second floor, and you can go right next to the Boston Metro stop. There are two delicatessens, one's a sort of vaguely Italian delicatessen, and it has salad sandwiches, and next to it is another one called Primo Deli, and it has the sandwiches.
So with respect to the people online, I suggest we will resume what?
1:15.
Okay, we're talking about resuming at 1:15, and I'll put that onto the chat room.
I'll rejoin in about 2 hours. I'll drive home in the meantime.
Okay.